far side of his bed so that Roland saw her through the twists and loops of woven white silk. She placed her hands lightly on the left side of his chest, bent over him, and shook her head from side to side, like one expressing a brisk negative. The bells she wore on her forehead rang sharply, and Roland once more felt that weird stirring up his back, accompanied by a low ripple of pain. It was as if he had shuddered without actually shuddering, or shuddered in a dream. What happened next almost did jerk a scream from him. He had to bite his lips against it. Once more, the unconscious man's legs seemed to move without moving, because it was what was on them that moved. The man's hairy shins, ankles, and feet were exposed below the hem of his beddress. Now a black wave of bugs moved down them. They were singing fiercely, like an army column that sings as it marches. Roland remembered the black scar across the man's cheek and nose, the scar that had disappeared. More such as these, of course. And they were on him as well. That was how he could shiver without shivering. They were all over his back, battening on him. No, keeping back a scream wasn't as easy as he had expected it to be. The bugs ran down to the tips of the suspended man's toes, then leapt off them in waves, like creatures springing off an embankment and into a swimming hole. They organized themselves quickly and easily on the bright white sheet below, and began to march down to the floor in a battalion about a foot wide. Roland couldn't get a good look at them. The distance was too far and the light too dim, but he thought they were perhaps twice the size of ants, and a little smaller than the fat honeybees which had swarmed the flower beds back home. They sang as they went. The bearded man didn't sing. As the swarms of bugs that had coated his twisted legs began to diminish, he shuddered and groaned. The young woman put her hand on his brow and soothed him, making Roland a little jealous even in his revulsion at what he was seeing. And was what he was seeing really so awful? In Gilead, leeches had been used for certain ailments, swellings of the brain, the armpits, and the groin primarily. When it came to the brain, the leeches, ugly as they were certainly preferable to the next step, which was trepanning. Yet there was something loathsome about them, perhaps only because he couldn't see them well, and something awful about trying to imagine them all over his back as he hung here, helpless. Not singing, though. Why? Because they were feeding? Sleeping? Both at once? The bearded man's groans subsided. The bugs marched away across the floor toward one of the mildly rippling silken walls. Roland lost sight of them in the shadows. Jenna came back to him, her eyes anxious.
"Ye did well, yet I see how ye feel. It's on your face."
"The doctors," he said.
"Yes, their power is very great, but,"
she dropped her voice,
"I believe that drover is beyond their help. His legs are a little better, and the wounds on his face are all but healed, but he has injuries where the doctors cannot reach."
She traced a hand across her midsection, suggesting the location of these injuries, if not their nature. "And me?" Roland asked.
"Ye were ta'en by the green folk," she said. "Ye must have angered them powerfully for them not to kill ye outright. They roped ye and dragged ye instead. Tamara, Michella, and Louise were out gathering herbs. They saw the green folk at play with ye and bade them stop, but—"
"Do the muties always obey you, Sister Jenna?" She smiled, perhaps pleased he remembered her name.
"Not always, but mostly. This time they did, or ye'd have now found the clearing in the trees."
"I suppose so."
"The skin was stripped almost clean off your back. Red ye were from nape to waist. Ye'll always bear the scars, but the doctors have gone far toward healing ye. And their singing is passing fair, is it not?"
"Yes," Roland said. But the thought of those black things all over his back, roosting in his raw flesh, still revolted him.
I owe you thanks and give it freely. Anything I can do for you.
Tell me your name, then. Do that.
I'm Roland of Gilead, a gunslinger. I had revolvers, Sister Jenna. Have you seen them?
I've seen no shooters, she said, but cast her eyes aside.
The roses bloomed in her cheeks again. She might be a good nurse and fair, but Roland thought her a poor liar. He was glad. Good liars were common. Honesty, on the other hand, came dear.
Let the untruth pass for now, he told himself. She speaks it out of fear, I think.
Jenna?
The cry came from the deeper shadows at the far end of the infirmary. Today it seemed longer than ever to the gunslinger. And Sister Jenna jumped guiltily.
Come away! Ye've passed words enough to entertain 20 men. Let him sleep.
Aye,
she called, then turned back to Roland.
Don't let on that I showed you the doctors.
Mum is the word, Jenna.
She paused, biting her lip again, then suddenly swept back her wimple. It fell against the nape of her neck in a soft chiming of bells. Freed from its confinement, her hair swept against her cheeks like shadows.
Am I pretty? Am I? Tell me the truth, Roland of Gilead, no flattery. For flattery's kind only a candle's length.
Pretty as a summer night.
What she saw in his face seemed to please her more than his words, because she smiled radiantly. She pulled the wimple up again, tucking her hair back in with quick little finger pokes.
Am I decent?
Decent as fair, he said.
Then cautiously lifted an arm and pointed at her brow.
One curl's out, just there.
Aye, always that one to devil me.
With a comical little grimace, she tucked it back. Roland thought how much he would like to kiss her rosy cheeks, and perhaps her rosy mouth for good measure.
All's well, he said.
Jenna!
The cry was more impatient than ever.
Meditations!
I'm coming just now,
she called, and gathered her voluminous skirts to go. Yet she turned back once more, her face now very grave and very serious.
One more thing,
she said in a voice only a step above a whisper. She snatched a quick look around.
The gold medallion ye wear it because it's yours. Do we understand? James?
Yes. He turned his head a bit to look at the sleeping boy. This is my brother.
If they ask, yes. To say different would be to get Jenna in serious trouble.
How serious, he did not ask. And she was gone, in any case, seeming to flow along the aisle between all the empty beds, her skirt caught up in one hand. The roses had fled from her face, leaving her cheeks and brow ashy. He remembered the greedy look on the faces of the others, how they had gathered around him in a tightening knot, and the way their faces had shimmered. 6 women, 5 old and 1 young. Doctors that sang and then crawled away across the floor when dismissed by jingling bells. And an improbable hospital ward of perhaps 100 beds, a ward with a silk roof and silk walls, and all the beds empty save 3. Roland didn't understand why Jenna had taken the dead boy's medallion from his pants pocket and put it around his neck, but he had an idea that if they found out she had done so, the little sisters of Aluria might kill her. Roland closed his eyes, and the soft singing of the doctor insects once again floated him off into sleep. 4. A bowl of soup, the boy in the next bed, the night nurses. Roland dreamed that a very large bug, a doctor bug mayhap, was flying around his head and banging repeatedly into his nose. collisions which were annoying rather than painful. He swiped at the bug repeatedly, and although his hands were eerily fast under ordinary circumstances, he kept missing it, and each time he missed, the bug giggled.
"I'm slow because I've been sick," he thought.
No, ambushed, dragged across the ground by slow mutants, saved by the little sisters of Eluria. Roland had a sudden vivid image of a man's shadow growing from the shadow of an overturned freight wagon, heard a rough, gleeful voice cry, "Boo!" He jerked awake hard enough to set his body rocking in its complication of slings, and the woman who had been standing beside his head, giggling as she tapped his nose lightly with a wooden spoon, stepped back so quickly that the bowl in her other hand slipped from her fingers. Roland's hands shot out, and they were quick as ever. His frustrated failure to catch the bug had been only part of his dream. He caught the bowl before more than a few drops could spill. The woman, Sister Coquina, looked at him with round eyes. There was pain all up and down his back from the sudden movement, but it was nowhere near as sharp as it had been before, and there was no sensation of movement on his skin. Perhaps the doctors were only sleeping, but he had an idea they were gone. He held out his hand for the spoon Coquina had been teasing him with. He found he wasn't surprised at all that one of these would tease a sick and sleeping man in such a way. It would have surprised him only if it had been Jenna. And she handed it to him, her eyes still big.
"How speedy ye are," she said. "'Twas like a magic trick, and you still rising from sleep."
"Remember it, Si," he said, and tried the soup. There were tiny bits of chicken floating in it. He probably would have considered it bland under other circumstances, but under these it seemed ambrosial. He began to eat greedily.
"What do we mean by that?" she asked.
The light was very dim now, the wall panels across the way a pinkish orange that suggested sunset. In this light, Coquina looked quite young and pretty. But it was a glamour, Roland was sure, a sorceress kind of makeup.
"I mean nothing in particular."
Roland dismissed the spoon as too slow, preferring to tilt the bowl itself to his lips. In this way he disposed of the soup in four large gulps.
"You've been kind to me."
"Aye, so we have,"
she said rather indignantly.
"And I hope your kindness has no hidden motive. If it does, sister, remember that I'm quick. And as for myself, I have not always been kind."
She made no reply, only took the bowl when Roland handed it back. She did this delicately, perhaps not wanting to touch his fingers. Her eyes dropped to where the medallion lay, once more hidden beneath the breast of his bed-dress. He said no more, not wanting to weaken the implied threat by reminding her that the man who made it was unarmed, next to naked, and hung in the air because his back couldn't yet bear the weight of his body.
"Where's Sister Jenna?" he asked.
"Ooh,"
Sister Coquina said, raising her eyebrows.
"We like her, do we? She makes our heart go."
She put her hand against the rose on her breast and fluttered it rapidly.
"Not at all, not at all," Roland said. "But she was kind. I doubt she would have teased me with a spoon, as some would."
Sister Coquina's smile faded. She looked both angry and worried.
"Say nothing of that to Mary if she comes by later. You might get me in trouble."
"Should I care?"
"I might get back at one who caused me trouble by causing little Jenna trouble,"
Sister Coquina said.
"She's in Big Sister's black books just now, anyway. Sister Mary doesn't care for the way Jenna spoke to her about ye. Nor does she like it that Jenna came back to us wearing the dark bells."
This was scarcely out of her mouth before Sister Coquina put her hand over that frequently imprudent organ, as if realizing she had said too much. Roland, intrigued by what she'd said, but not liking to show it just now, only replied, I'll keep my mouth shut about you if you keep your mouth shut to Sister Mary about Jenna. Coquina looked relieved.
Aye, that's a bargain.
She leaned forward confidingly.
She's in Thoughtful House. That's the little cave in the hillside where we have to go and meditate when Big Sister decides we've been bad. She'll have to stay and consider her impudence until Mary lets her out.
She paused, then said abruptly,
"Who's this beside ye, do ye know?"
Roland turned his head and saw that the young man was awake and had been listening. His eyes were as dark as Jenna's. "Know him?" Roland asked, with what he hoped was the right touch of scorn. "Should I not know my own brother?"
"Is he now, and him so young, and you so old?"
Another of the sisters materialized out of the darkness, Sister Tamra, who had called herself 21. In the moment before she reached Roland's bed, her face was that of a hag who will never see 80 again, or 90. Then it shimmered and was once more the plump, healthy countenance of a 30-year-old matron. Except for the eyes. They remained yellowish in the corneas, gummy in the corners, and watchful. "He's the youngest, I the eldest," Roland said. "Betwixt us are 7 others, and 20 years of our parents' lives."
"How sweet! And if he's your brother, then ye'll know his name, won't ye? Know it very well."
Before the gunslinger could flounder, the young man said, "They think you've forgotten such a simple hook as John Norman. What colleens they be, eh, Jimmy?" Coquina and Tamra looked at the pale boy in the bed next to Roland's, clearly angry and clearly trumped, for the time being, at least. "You fed him your muck," said the boy, whose medallion undoubtedly proclaimed him John, loved of family, loved of God. "Why don't you go and let us have a natter?"
"Well,"
Sister Coquina huffed,
"I like the gratitude around here, so I do."
"I'm grateful for what's given me," Norman responded, looking at her steadily, "but not for what folk would take away." Tamra snorted through her nose, turned violently enough for her swirling dress to push a draft of air into Roland's face, and then took her leave. Coquina stayed a moment.
"Be discreet, and mayhap someone ye like better than ye like me will get out of hack in the morning instead of a week from tonight."
Without waiting for a reply, she turned and followed Sister Tamra. Roland and John Norman waited until they were both gone, and then Norman turned to Roland and spoke in a low voice.
"My brother, dead?"
Roland nodded.
"The medallion I took in case I should meet with any of his people. It rightly belongs to you. I'm sorry for your loss."
"Thank you, Si."
John Norman's lower lip trembled, then firmed.
"I knew the green men did for him, although these old biddies wouldn't tell me for sure. They did for plenty and scotched the rest."
"Perhaps the sisters didn't know for sure."
"They knew, don't you doubt it. They don't say much, but they know plenty. The only one any different is Jenna. That's who the old battle axe meant when she said your friend, aye?"
Roland nodded.
"And she said something about the dark bells. I'd know more of that if wood were could."
"She's something special, Jenna is. More like a princess. Someone whose place is made by bloodline and can't be refused, than like the other sisters. I lie here and look like I'm asleep. It's safer, I think, but I've heard 'em talking. Jenna's just come back among 'em recently, and those dark bells mean something special. But Mary's still the one who swings the weight. I think the dark bells are only ceremonial, like the rings the old barons used to hand down from father to son. Was it she who put Jimmy's medal around your neck?"
"Yes."
"Don't take it off, whatever you do."
His face was strained, grim.
"I don't know if it's the gold or the god, but they don't like to get too close. I think that's the only reason I'm still here."
Now his voice dropped all the way to a whisper.
"They ain't human."
"Well, perhaps a bit fey and magical, but
No.
With what was clearly an effort, the boy got up on one elbow. He looked at Roland earnestly.
You're thinking about hubber women or witches. These ain't hubbers nor witches either. They ain't human.
Then what are they?
Don't know.
How came you here, John?
Speaking in a low voice, John Norman told Roland what he knew of what had happened to him. He, his brother, and four other young men who were quick and owned good horses had been hired as scouts, riding drogue and forward, protecting a long-haul caravan of 7 freight wagons taking goods, seeds, food, tools, mail, and 4 ordered brides, to an unincorporated township called Tejas, some 200 miles farther west of Elluria. The scouts rode fore and aft of the goods train in turn and turnabout fashion. One brother rode with each party because, Norman explained, when they were together they fought like, well,
like brothers, Roland suggested.
John Norman managed a brief, pained smile.
Aye, he said.
The trio of which John was a part had been riding drogue about 2 miles behind the freight wagons when the green mutants had sprung an ambush in Elluria.
How many wagons did you see when you got there? He asked Roland.
Only one, overturned.
How many bodies?
Only your brother's.
John Norman nodded grimly.
They wouldn't take him because of the medallion, I think.
The muties?
The sisters. The muties care nothing for gold or God. These bitches, though.
He looked into the dark, which was now almost complete. Roland felt lethargy creeping over him again, but it wasn't until later that he realized the soup had been drugged.
The other wagons, Roland asked. The ones not overturned?
The muties would have taken them, and the goods as well, Norman said.
They don't care for gold or God. The sisters don't care for goods. Like as not, they have their own foodstuffs, something I'd as soon not think of. Nasty stuff. Like those bugs.
He and the other drogue riders galloped into Elluria, but the fight was over by the time they got there. Men had been lying about, some dead, but many more still alive. At least 2 of the ordered brides had still been alive as well. Survivors able to walk were being herded together by the green folk. John Norman remembered the one in the bowler hat very well, and the woman in the ragged red vest. Norman and the other 2 had tried to fight. He had seen one of his pards gut shot by an arrow, and then he saw no more. Someone had cracked him over the head from behind, and the lights had gone out. Roland wondered if the ambusher had cried boo before he had struck, but didn't ask.
When I woke up again, I was here, Norman said. I saw that some of the others, most of them, had those cursed bugs on them.
Others?
Roland looked at the empty beds. In the growing darkness, they glimmered like white islands.
How many were brought here?
At least 20. They healed, the bugs healed them, and then, one by one, they disappeared. You'd go to sleep, and when you woke up, there'd be 1 more empty bed. One by one they went, until only me and that one down yonder was left.
He looked at Roland solemnly.
And now you.
Norman.
Roland's head was swimming.
I reckon I know what's wrong with you, Norman said.
He seemed to speak from far away, perhaps from all the way around the curve of the earth.
It's the soup, but a man has to eat. A woman, too, if she's a natural woman, anyway. These ones ain't natural. Even Sister Jenna's not natural. Nice don't mean natural.
Further and further away.
And she'll be like them in the end, mark me well. Can't move.
Saying even that required a huge effort. It was like moving boulders.
No,
Norman suddenly laughed. It was a shocking sound and echoed in the growing blackness which filled Roland's head.
It ain't just sleep medicine they put in their soup. It's can't-move medicine, too.
There's nothing much wrong with me, brother.
So why do you think I'm still here?
Norman was now speaking not from around the curve of the earth, but perhaps from the moon. He said, I don't think either of us is ever going to see the sun shining on a flat piece of ground again.
You're wrong about that,
Roland tried to reply. And more in that vein as well, but nothing came out. He sailed around to the black side of the moon, losing all his words in the void he found there. Yet he never quite lost awareness of himself. Perhaps the dose of medicine in Sister Coquina's soup had been badly calculated, or perhaps it was just that they never had a gunslinger to work their mischief on, and did not know they had one now. Except, of course, for Sister Jenna. She knew. At some point in the night, whispering, giggling voices and lightly chiming bells brought him back from the darkness where he had been biding, not quite asleep or unconscious. Around him, so constant he now barely heard it, were the singing doctors. Roland opened his eyes. He saw pale and chancy light dancing in the black air. The giggles and whispers were closer. Roland tried to turn his head and at first couldn't. He rested, gathered his will into a hard blue ball, and tried again. This time his head did turn. Only a little, but a little was enough. It was five of the little sisters. Mary, Louise, Tamara, Coquina, Michella. They came up the long aisle of the black infirmary, laughing together like children out on a prank, carrying long tapers and silver holders, the bells lining the forehead bands of their wimples, chiming little silver runs of sound. They gathered about the bed of the bearded man. From within their circle, candle glow rose in a shimmery column that died before it got halfway to the silken ceiling. Sister Mary spoke briefly. Roland recognized her voice, but not the words. It was neither low speech nor the high, but some other language entirely. One phrase stood out. Candle latch, me him in tow. And he had no idea what it might mean. He realized that now he could hear only the tinkle of bells the doctor bugs had stilled.
Brass me on, on, Sister Mary cried in a harsh, powerful voice.
The candles went out. The light that had shone through the wings of their wimples as they gathered around the bearded man's bed vanished, and all was darkness once more. Roland waited for what might happen next, his skin cold. He tried to flex his hands or feet and could not. He had been able to move his head perhaps 15 degrees, otherwise he was as paralyzed as a fly neatly wrapped up and hung in a spider's web. The low jingling of bells in the black, and then sucking sounds. As soon as he heard them, Roland knew he'd been waiting for them. Some part of him had known what the little sisters of Alluria were all along. If Roland could have raised his hands, he would have put them to his ears to block those sounds out. As it was, he could only lie still, listening and waiting for them to stop. For a long time, forever it seemed, they did not. The women slurped and grunted like pigs snuffling half-liquefied feed up out of a trough. There was even one resounding belch, followed by more whispered giggles. These ended when Sister Mary uttered a single curt word, "Heis!" And once there was a low moaning cry from the bearded man, Roland was quite sure. If so, it was his last on this side of the clearing. In time, the sounds of their feeding began to taper off. As it did, the bugs began to sing again, first hesitantly, then with more confidence. The whispering and giggling recommenced. The candles were relit. Roland was by now lying with his head turned in the other direction. He didn't want them to know what he'd seen, but that wasn't all. He had no urge to see more on any account. He had seen and heard enough. but the giggles and whispers now came his way. Roland closed his eyes, concentrating on the medallion that lay against his chest.
"I don't know if it's the gold or the god, but they don't like to get too close," John Norman had said.
It was good to have such a thing to remember as the little sisters drew nigh, gossiping and whispering in their strange other tongue. But the medallion seemed a thin protection in the dark. Faintly, at a great distance, Roland heard the cross dog barking. As the sisters circled him, the gunslinger realized he could smell them. It was a low, unpleasant odor like spoiled meat. And what else would they smell of, such as these?
"Such a pretty man it is,"
Sister Mary. She spoke in a low, meditative tone.
"But such an ugly sickle it wears,"
Sister Tamra.
"We'll have it off him,"
Sister Louise.
"And then we shall have kisses,"
Sister Coquina.
"Kisses for all,"
exclaimed Sister Michella with such fervent enthusiasm that they all laughed. Roland discovered that not all of him was paralyzed after all. Part of him had, in fact, arisen from its sleep at the sound of their voices and now stood tall. A hand reached beneath the bed-dress he wore, touched that stiffened member, encircled it, caressed it. He lay in silent horror, feigning sleep, as wet warmth almost immediately spilled from him. The hand remained where it was for a moment, the thumb rubbing up and down the wilting shaft. Then it let him go and rose a little higher, found the wetness pooled on his lower belly. Giggles, soft as wind. Chiming bells. Roland opened his eyes the tiniest crack and looked up at the ancient faces laughing down at him in the light of their candles, glittering eyes, yellow cheeks, hanging teeth that jutted over lower lips. Sister Michella and Sister Louise appeared to have grown goatees, but of course that wasn't the darkness of hair, but of the bearded man's blood. Mary's hand was cupped. She passed it from sister to sister, each licked from her palm in the candlelight. Roland closed his eyes all the way and waited for them to be gone. Eventually they were. "I'll never sleep again," he thought, and was 5 minutes later lost to himself and the world. 5. Sister Mary. A message. A visit from Ralph. Norman's fate. Sister Mary again. When Roland awoke, it was full daylight. The silk roof overhead a bright white and billowing in a mild breeze. The doctor bugs were singing contentedly. Beside him on his left, Norman was heavily asleep with his head turned so far to one side that his stubbly cheek rested on his shoulder. Roland and John Norman were the only ones here. Farther down on their side of the infirmary, the bed where the bearded man had been was empty. Its top sheet pulled up and neatly tucked in, the pillow neatly nestled in a crisp white case. The complication of slings in which his body had rested was gone. Roland remembered the candles, the way their glow had combined and streamed up in a column, illuminating the sisters as they gathered around the bearded man, giggling, their damned bells jingling. Now, as if summoned by his thoughts, came Sister Mary, gliding along rapidly with Sister Louise in her wake. Louise bore a tray and looked nervous. Mary was frowning, obviously not in good temper. "To be grumpy after you've fed so well," Roland thought. "Fie, sister." She reached the gunslinger's bed and looked down at him.
"I have little to thank ye for, Si," she said with no preamble.
"Have I asked for your thanks?"
he responded in a voice that sounded as dusty and little used as the pages of an old book. She took no notice.
Eve made one who was only impudent and restless with her place, outright rebellious. Well, her mother was the same way, and died of it not long after returning Jenna to her proper place. Raise your hand, thankless man. I can't. I can't move at all. Oh, Callie, haven't you heard it said, fool not your mother lest she's out of face? I know pretty well what ye can and can't do. Now raise your hand.
Roland raised his right hand, trying to suggest more effort than it actually took. He thought that this morning he might be strong enough to slip free of the slings. But what then? Any real walking would be beyond him for hours yet, even without another dose of medicine. And behind Sister Mary, Sister Louise was taking the cover from a fresh bowl of soup. As Roland looked at it, his stomach rumbled. Big Sister heard and smiled a bit.
Even lying in bed builds an appetite in a strong man if it's done long enough. Wouldn't you say so, Jason, brother of John?
My name is James, as you well know, sister.
Do I?
She laughed angrily.
Oh, la! And if I whipped your little sweetheart hard enough and long enough, until the blood jumped out of her back like drops of sweat, let us say, should I not whip a different name out of her? Or didn't ye trust her with it during your little talk?
Touch her and I'll kill you.
She laughed again. Her face shimmered. Her firm mouth turned into something that looked like a dying jellyfish.
Speak not of killing to us, Cully, lest we speak of it to you.
Sister, if you and Jenna don't see eye to eye, why not release her from her vows and let her go her course?
Such as us can never be released from our vows, nor be let go. Her mother tried and then came back, her dying and the girl sick. Why, it was we nursed Jenna back to health after her mother was nothing but dirt in the breeze that blows out toward Endworld, and how little she thanks us. Besides, she bears the dark bells, the sigil of our sisterhood, of our quartet. Now eat. Your belly says ye're hungry.
Sister Louise offered the bowl, but her eyes kept drifting to the shape the medallion made under the breast of his bed-dress.
Don't like it, do you?
Roland thought, and then remembered Louise by candlelight, the freighter's blood on her chin, her ancient eyes eager as she leaned forward to lick his spend from Sister Mary's hand. He turned his head aside.
I want nothing.
But you're hungry. Louise protested. If ye don't eat, James, how will ye get his strength back?
Send Jenna. I'll eat what she brings.
Sister Mary's frown was black.
You'll see her no more. She's been released from Thoughtful House only on her solemn promise to double her time of meditation and to stay out of infirmary. Now eat, James, or whoever ye are. Take what's in the soup, or we'll cut ye with knives and rub it in with flannel poultices. Either way, makes no difference to us, does it, Louise?
Nah,
Louise said. She still held out the bowl. Steam rose from it and the good smell of chicken.
But it might make a difference to you.
Sister Mary grinned humorlessly, baring her unnaturally large teeth.
Flowing blood's risky around here. The doctors don't like it. It stirs them up.
It wasn't just the bugs that were stirred up at the sight of blood, and Roland knew it. He also knew he had no choice in the matter of the soup. He took the bowl from Louise and ate slowly. He would have given much to wipe out the look of satisfaction he saw on Sister Mary's face.
Good,
she said. After he handed the bowl back and she peered inside to make sure it was completely empty. His hand thumped back into the sling which had been rigged for it, already too heavy to hold up. He could feel the world drawing away again. Sister Mary leaned forward, the billowing top of her habit touching the skin of his left shoulder. He could smell her, an aroma both ripe and dry, and would have gagged if he'd had the strength.
Have that foul gold thing off ye when your strength comes back a little. Put it in the pissoir under the bed, where it belongs. For to be even this close to where it lies hurts my head and makes my throat close.
Speaking with enormous effort, Roland said,
If you want it, take it. How can I stop you, you bitch?
Once more, her frown turned her face into something like a thunderhead. He thought she would have slapped him if she had dared touch him so close to where the medallion lay. Her ability to touch seemed to end above his waist, however.
I think you had better consider the matter a little more fully, she said. I can still have Jenna whipped if I like. She bears the dark bells, but I am the big sister. Consider that very well.
She left. Sister Louise followed, casting one look, a strange combination of fright and lust, back over her shoulder. Roland thought,
I must get out of here, I must.
Instead, he drifted back to that dark place which wasn't quite sleep. Or perhaps he did sleep, at least for a while. Perhaps he dreamed. Fingers once more caressed his fingers, and lips first kissed his ear, and then whispered into it.
Look beneath your pillow, Roland, but let no one know I was here.
At some point after this, Roland opened his eyes again, half expecting to see Sister Jenna's pretty young face hovering above him, and that comma of dark hair once more poking out from beneath her wimple. There was no one. The swags of silk overhead were at their brightest, and although it was impossible to tell the hours in here with any real accuracy, Roland guessed it to be around noon, perhaps 3 hours since his second bowl of the sister's soup. Beside him, John Norman still slept, his breath whistling out in faint nasal snores. Roland tried to raise his hand and slide it under his pillow. The hand wouldn't move. He could wiggle the tips of his fingers, but that was all. He waited, calming his mind as well as he could, gathering his patience. Patience wasn't easy to come by. He kept thinking about what Norman had said, that there had been 20 survivors of the ambush, at least to start with.
One by one they went, until only me and that one down yonder was left. And now you.
The girl wasn't here. His mind spoke in the soft, regretful tone of Alain, one of his old friends, dead these many years now. She wouldn't dare, not with the others watching. That was only a dream you had. But Roland thought perhaps it had been more than a dream. Some length of time later, the slowly shifting brightness overhead made him believe it had been about an hour. Roland tried his hand again. This time he was able to get it beneath his pillow. This was puffy and soft, tucked snugly into the wide sling that supported the gunslinger's neck. At first he found nothing, but as his fingers worked their slow way deeper, they touched what felt like a stiffish bundle of thin rods. He paused, gathering a little more strength. Every movement was like swimming in glue. And then burrowed deeper. It felt like a dead bouquet. Wrapped around it was what felt like a ribbon. Roland looked around to make sure the ward was still empty and Norman still asleep, then drew out what was under the pillow. It was 6 brittle stems of fading green with brownish reed heads at the tops. They gave off a strange yeasty aroma that made Roland think of early morning begging expeditions to the great house kitchens as a child, forays he had usually made with Cuthbert. The stems were tied with a wide white silk ribbon and smelled like burnt toast. Beneath the ribbon was a fold of cloth. Like everything else in this cursed place, it seemed, the cloth was of silk. Roland was breathing hard and could feel drops of sweat on his brow. Still alone, though, good. He took the scrap of cloth and unfolded it. Printed painstakingly in blurred charcoal letters was this message.
Nibble heads, once each hour. Too much, cramps, or death. Tomorrow night. Can't be sooner. Be careful.
No explanation, but Roland supposed none was needed. Nor did he have any option. If he remained here, he would die. All they had to do was have the medallion off him, and he felt sure Sister Mary was smart enough to figure a way to do that. He nibbled at one of the dry reed heads. The taste was nothing like the toast they had begged from the kitchen as boys. It was bitter in his throat and hot in his stomach. Less than a minute after his nibble, his heart rate had doubled. His muscles awakened, but not in a pleasant way, as after good sleep. They felt first trembly and then hard, as if they were gathered into knots. This feeling passed rapidly, and his heartbeat was back to normal before Norman stirred awake an hour or so later. But he understood why Jenna's note had warned him not to take more than a nibble at a time. This was very powerful stuff. He slipped the bouquet of reeds back under the pillow, being careful to brush away the few crumbles of vegetable matter which had dropped to the sheet. Then he used the ball of his thumb to blur the painstaking charcoaled words on the bit of silk. When he was finished, there was nothing on the square but meaningless smudges. The square he also tucked back under his pillow. When Norman awoke, he and the gunslinger spoke briefly of the young scout's home. Delane it was, sometimes known jestingly as Dragon's Lair or Liar's Heaven. All tall tales were said to originate in Delane. The boy asked Roland to take his medallion and that of his brother home to their parents, if Roland was able, and explain as well as he could what had happened to James and John, sons of Jesse.
"You'll do that all yourself," Roland said.
"No."
Norman tried to raise his hand, perhaps to scratch his nose, and was unable to do even that. The hand rose perhaps 6 inches, then fell back to the counterpane with a small thump.
"I think not. It's a pity for us to have run up against each other this way, you know. I like you."
"And I you, John Norman. Would that we were better met."
"Aye, when not in the company of such fascinating ladies."
He dropped off to sleep again soon after. Roland never spoke with him again, although he certainly heard from him, yes. Roland was lying above his bed, shamming sleep, as John Norman screamed his last. Sister Michella came with his evening soup just as Roland was getting past the shivery muscles and galloping heartbeat that resulted from his second nibble of brown reed. Michella looked at his flushed face with some concern, but had to accept his assurances that he did not feel feverish. She couldn't bring herself to touch him and judge the heat of his skin for herself. The medallion held her away. With the soup was a pupkin. The bread was leathery and the meat inside it tough, but Roland demolished it greedily just the same. Michella watched with a complacent smile, hands folded in front of her, nodding from time to time. When he had finished the soup, she took the bowl back from him carefully, making sure their fingers did not touch.
"You're healing," she said. "Soon you'll be on your way, and we'll have just your memory to keep, Jim."
"Is that true?" he asked quietly.
She only looked at him, touched her tongue against her upper lip, giggled, and departed. Roland closed his eyes and lay back against his pillow, feeling lethargy steal over him again. Her speculative eyes, her peeping tongue. He had seen women look at roast chickens and joints of mutton that same way, calculating when they might be done. His body badly wanted to sleep, but Roland held on to wakefulness for what he judged was an hour, then worked one of the reeds out from under the pillow. With a fresh infusion of their can't-move medicine in his system, this took an enormous effort, and he wasn't sure he could have done it at all had he not separated this one reed from the ribbon holding the others. Tomorrow night, Jenna's note had said. If that meant escape, the idea seemed preposterous. The way he felt now, he might be lying in his bed until the end of the age. He nibbled. Energy washed into his system, clenching his muscles and racing his heart. But the burst of vitality was gone almost as soon as it came, buried beneath the sister's stronger drug. He could only hope and sleep. When he woke, it was full dark, and he found he could move his arms and legs in their network of slings almost naturally. He slipped one of the reeds out from beneath his pillow and nibbled cautiously. She had left half a dozen, and the first two were now almost entirely consumed. The gunslinger put the stem back under the pillow, then began to shiver like a wet dog in a downpour. I took too much, he thought. I'll be lucky not to convulse. His heart racing like a runaway engine. And then, to make matters worse, he saw candlelight at the far end of the aisle. A moment later, he heard the rustle of their gowns and the whisk of their slippers. Gods, why now? They'll see me shaking, they'll know. Calling on every bit of his willpower and control, Roland closed his eyes and concentrated on stilling his jerking limbs. If only he had been in bed instead of in these cursed slings, which seemed to tremble as if with their own ague at every movement. The little sisters drew closer. The light of their candles bloomed red within his closed eyelids. Tonight they were not giggling nor whispering among themselves. It was not until they were almost on top of him that Roland became aware of the stranger in their midst, a creature that breathed through its nose in great slobbery gasps of mixed air and snot. The gunslinger lay with his eyes closed, the gross twitches and jumps of his arms and legs under control, but with his muscles still knotted and crampy, thrumming beneath the skin. Anyone who looked at him closely would see at once that something was wrong with him. His heart was larruping away like a horse under the whip. Surely they must see. But it wasn't him they were looking at. Not yet, at least.
"Have it off him," Mary said.
She spoke in a bastardized version of the low speech Roland could barely understand.
"Then t'other'n. Go on, Ralph."
"You says whisky?"
the slobberer asked, his dialect even heavier than Mary's.
"You says baccy?"
"Yes, yes, plenty whiskey and plenty smoke, but not until you have these wretched things off."
Impatient, perhaps afraid as well. Roland cautiously rolled his head to the left and cracked his eyelids open. Five of the six little sisters of Eluria were clustered around the far side of the sleeping John Norman's bed, their candles raised to cast their light upon him. It also cast light upon their own faces, faces which would have given the strongest man nightmares. Now in the ditch of the night their glamours were set aside, and they were but ancient corpses and voluminous habits. Sister Mary had one of Roland's guns in her hand. Looking at her holding it, Roland felt a bright flash of hate for her, and promised himself she would pay for her temerity. The thing standing at the foot of the bed, strange as it was, looked almost normal in comparison with the sisters. It was one of the green folk. Roland recognized Ralph at once. He would be a long time forgetting that bowler hat. Now Ralph walked slowly around to the side of Norman's bed closest to Roland, momentarily blocking the gunslinger's view of the sisters. The mutie went all the way to Norman's head, however, clearing the hags to Roland's slitted view once more. Norman's medallion lay exposed. The boy had perhaps wakened enough to take it out of his bed dress, hoping it would protect him better so. Ralph picked it up in his melted tallow hand. The sisters watched eagerly in the glow of their candles as the green man stretched it to the end of its chain and then put it down again. Their faces drooped in disappointment.
"Don't care for such as that," Ralph said in his clotted voice. "Want whiskey. Want baccy."
You shall have it, Sister Mary said. Enough for you and all your verminous clan. But first you must have that horrid thing off him, off both of them, do you understand? And you shan't tease us.
Or what? Ralph asked.
He laughed. It was a choked and gargly sound, the laughter of a man dying from some evil sickness of the throat and lungs. But Roland still liked it better than the giggles of the sisters.
Or what, Sister Mary? You'll drink my blood? My blood'd drop ye dead where ye stand and going in the dark.
Mary raised the gunslinger's revolver and pointed it at Ralph.
Take that wretched thing, or you die where you stand.
And die after I've done what you want, likely.
Sister Mary said nothing to that. The others peered at him with their black eyes. Ralph lowered his head, appearing to think. Roland suspected his friend Bowler Hat could think, too. Sister Mary and her cohorts might not believe that, but Ralph had to be trigged to have survived as long as he had. But of course when he came here he hadn't considered Roland's guns.
"Smasher was wrong to give them shooters to you,"
he said at last.
"Give 'em and not tell me. Did youse give him whiskey? Give him baccy?"
"That's none of yours," Sister Mary replied. "You have that gold piece off the boy's neck right now, or I'll put one of yonder man's bullets in what's left of your brain."
"All right,"
Ralph said.
"Just as you wish, Si."
Once more he reached down and took the gold medallion in his melted fist. That he did slow. What happened after happened fast. He snatched it away, breaking the chain and flinging the gold heedlessly into the dark. With his other hand he reached down, sank his long and ragged nails into John Norman's neck, and tore it open. Blood flew from the hapless boy's throat in a jetting, heart-driven gush, more black than red in the candlelight, and he made a single bubbly cry. The women screamed, but not in horror. They screamed as women do in a frenzy of excitement. The green man was forgotten. Roland was forgotten, all was forgotten save the life's blood pouring out of John Norman's throat. They dropped their candles. Mary dropped Roland's revolver in the same hapless, careless fashion. The last the gunslinger saw as Ralph darted away into the shadows, whiskey and tobacco another time, wily Ralph must have thought. Tonight he had best concentrate on saving his own life. Was the sisters bending forward to catch as much of the flow as they could before it dried up? Roland lay in the dark, muscles shivering, heart pounding, listening to the harpies as they fed on the boy lying in the bed next to his own. It seemed to go on forever, but at last they had done with him. The sisters relit their candles and left, murmuring. When the drug in the soup once more got the better of the drug in the reeds, Roland was grateful. Yet for the first time since he'd come here, his sleep was haunted. In his dream, he stood looking down at the bloated body in the town trough, thinking of a line in the book marked Registry of Misdeeds and Redress. "Green folk sent hence," it had read. And perhaps the green folk had been sent hence, but then a worse tribe had come. The Little Sisters of Eluria, they called themselves. And a year hence they might be the Little Sisters of Tihas, or of Cambero, or of some other far western village. They came with their bells and their bugs. From where? Who knew? Did it matter? A shadow fell beside his on the scummy water of the trough. Roland tried to turn and face it. He couldn't. He was frozen in place. Then a green hand grasped his shoulder and whirled him about. It was Ralph. His bowler hat was cocked back on his head. John Norman's medallion, now red with blood, hung around his neck.
"Boo!"
cried Ralph, his lips stretching in a toothless grin. He raised a big revolver with worn sandalwood grips. He thumbed the hammer back. and Roland jerked awake, shivering all over, dressed in skin both wet and icy cold. He looked at the bed on his left. It was empty, the sheet pulled up and tucked about neatly, the pillow resting above it in its snowy sleeve. Of John Norman there was no sign.